You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Lindsay Ehrts, on location at the Utah State Capitol for the legislative session. Let's go inside Utah politics. Now we begin with a controversial proposal to overhaul the state's mail-in voting system that's gaining steam in the state house. Now legislative leaders expect House Bill 300 to get a vote in the coming days. This would make it so mail-in ballots have to be returned in person by default, so Utahns can show ID. Now, county clerk's offices would have to staff ballot drop boxes to do that. The bill has the support of House Speaker Mike Schultz, but the people who would have to implement this plan, the county clerks, aren't entirely on board.
As you can imagine, the majority of the clerks do have some concerns with this bill in the potential impact that it has on voters, how it would be implemented, the logistics of it, and the cost.
Now, Utah County Republican Representative Jeff Burton sponsoring this bill. He argues it's a necessary step to address security issues with the post office and a couple of recent legislative audits that show that state's voter rolls may not be as clean as they could be. Representative Burton, thank you for joining me.
Pleasure to be with you.
It's so good to be with you. I appreciate you coming to discuss this. It's one of the hotly contested bills on Capitol Hill. Just talk to me about the problem you want to solve with requiring voters to bring their mail-in ballots back in, show ID, and staff the polling places.
Yeah, thanks, Lindsay, for the question. Primarily what's happened, we're one of eight states that does mail-in voting that doesn't require ID. And we've been very careful to look at polls and surveys and looked at what voters want, what voters say they want to improve the security of elections. Nationally, more than 80% of voters say you should have to show ID when you vote. Here in Utah, it's still a majority. It's over 50% say you should have to show an ID when you vote. So that's job one we wanted to solve, is to require IDs when voting. It secures the election in a way that signatures cannot. Signatures are not truly identification. Identification is identification. So job one is to show the ID. Number two, we did have some problems with the mail, and that's pretty clear. Anybody who followed the 2024 election saw it. Indeed, we had an election down in southern Utah for Congress that may have gone the other way. More than 1,000 votes were mishandled or held too long in Las Vegas, cast by Utahns that didn't get there in time for the election. Had they gotten there, that election may have gone another direction. And then one of the other real difficult things in our polls and surveys we found was that Utahns, above everything else, were more exercised about this idea that they wanted election results the night of the election. They didn't understand why we were one of a handful of states that took days and days after the election to release results. This bill will require that the clerks count the votes on hand on election day. And they can statistically call the election like other states do. It's done statistically, even though there are a few votes that haven't been counted. We do not believe that the absentee votes will change the election much. And in those cases, when elections are close, they can be announced that way. This one's too close to call. But people have an expectation from what they see on television that other states were able to call the election. We didn't seem to be able to do it.
But the decision to do that in the 2024 general election was the lieutenant governor's. It wasn't a decision based on the county clerks and their ability to not count ballots.
I think the clerks will tell you, because I've had multiple meetings with them, that they probably could have projected the election with what they had. But the idea with this bill is we don't worry about postmarks anymore. And I want to point out that more than 65% of Utahns returned their ballot at a drop box, which indicates to me the convenience of that and the fact that maybe some of them didn't trust the Postal Service to get it there on time.
But let's talk about that drop box issue really fast, because in Salt Lake County alone, this is one county out of our 29, they are going to have to go from 28 to 75 drop boxes because of the requirements in your bill, which requires one drop box for every 10,000 voters. That's going to be a significant cost. That's going to require them to be staffed, right, significantly. How do you explain not only that cost, but also just the logistics that the clerks take serious issue with?
Yeah, I know the clerks are concerned about that. And, you know, this is the nation that planned D-Day. I mean, logistics are everything. The execution is going to be critical to this bill. And so I do understand the concern, and I've spoken with them about that on multiple occasions. We like to tout the idea that Utah is the number one volunteer state. We have many people in this state that will volunteer to be at those drop boxes. If you recall, I'm an elderly person. I do remember very clearly when my lunch lady worked at the junior higher at the National Guard Armory doing elections. And we have a lot of folks that are going to jump in and want to be a part of this. And the other factor here is what we're talking about is this is a midterm election, so it won't be quite as busy as a presidential, and it's a good opportunity to work out the bugs.
Talk to me about how you address the elderly voters, the people on the Navajo Nation, the homebound, the people who cannot physically get their mail-in ballot in.
You know, I just had a nice meeting with the Navajo Nation, and I have a love for them. I had 50 Navajo soldiers in my unit in Iraq, and they're amazing people. The problem out there is a problem of distance, and it's also a problem of identification. We need to do a better job of getting them ID, and so that's something we're going to work on. Many of the elderly people don't have a state-issued ID, so truly they're not even voting now because you have to have that to register. But we understand that the elderly, the infirm, in fact, maybe can't come in, and that is why it's already listed in Utah code. House Bill 245 in 2014 created an electronic voting opportunity for folks like that. We're going to make sure that that's very clear in this bill, that that's in place. And so these people don't have to physically come in to vote.
In our last minute, just two quick questions. Explain how this does not defeat the purpose of voting by mail, because on its face, I know there's an option to opt in to return your ballot, but on its face, it's get mailed a ballot and take it back in. That doesn't seem like returning it by mail.
Yeah, and again, we have the opt-in, so folks know you can opt in and just vote the same way you do now. You know, for me, I get asked all the time about disenfranchising voters, and to me, the current system is what disenfranchises voters. When we are curing signatures, we don't have professional people that evaluate signatures. They're doing the very best they can. But even so, 20,000 ballots got thrown out in this last election because the signatures couldn't be validated. Those are 20,000 voters that didn't get to vote. With this system, once your ID is checked, that envelope is stamped, it's secured, there will be chain of custody back to the clerks. Those will be under lock and key until voting day, and then those things can be counted very rapidly because they've already been vetted and there's no need for curing. So I think, you know, the question I ask is, why can't we do this? We can make this happen. Our elections will be more secure. And what we want to do is reinstill confidence in the vote. We have a lot of people that don't have confidence in the system.
Give me a quick 2-second answer on how you avoid a stalemate with the Senate and the governor when they have not seemed supportive of this idea.
You know, I think we're resolute. We're going to go forward. One thing we've proven in Utah is we interact. We work together. We're going to come to a solution. I'm confident that all sides can approve of and we can make it happen.
Representative Jeff Burton, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Now, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, we're checking with the other side of the aisle. One of the Democrats on that committee explains his no vote.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Welcome back into Inside Utah Politics. We're continuing our deep dive into the proposal to return your mail-in ballot in person. You just heard from the bill's sponsor about his reasons for wanting voters to return their ballots in person and show ID. But not everyone on that government operations committee was on board, with one Democrat saying the bill needs tweaks before he'd be comfortable sending it to the floor.
I have a hard time forwarding a bill to the floor knowing that a substantive change in policy is going to be coming forward. This is what committees are for.
Now, the bill sponsor, Representative Jeff Burton, has promised some of those changes, but the governor and Senate leaders have expressed some skepticism of this whole idea. Representative Andrew Stoddard, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay, so talk to me about this mail-in ballot bill and some of the ways you would support it. There are some people, like county clerks, the governor, still not on board with this. What changes would you need to see to be able to support this?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is we've got to address the fiscal impact of this bill.
I know we've got a number that says it's going to cost our clerks statewide about $6 million a year. I'm guessing that's low. I think we need to make sure that it's funded. And look, this is a policy that is widely popular among the electorate, but I don't think this bill is quite there in a lot of ways, including the funding.
So when you say the policy is widely supported, is it showing ID that's supported? Is it returning your ballot in person? Because those are two different proposals. And right now this proposal says return your ballot in person to show ID. It feels like we could maybe parse those out a little bit where people don't have to go in person. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I think the bill itself is on a good track for differentiating. You know, there's the show up in person, show them your ID, drop it off, which I would argue is not mail-in voting. That's I get my ballot in the mail and then vote in person, which is still good, but we're going to disenfranchise a lot of people that love mail-in voting. But there is a provision that allows for a temporary opt-out for 2 years if you go into the county clerk, prove you are who you are, and then you can return it by mail also. And I really like that, and I think we should maybe just make that the standard. I know we've had a lot of bills dealing with voter cleanup on our rolls, and I think this kind of target both those issues by making people show up, show where they live so that they're getting the ballot in the right place. And I don't have a problem with that occurring every so often.
Republicans argue that there are security concerns with the way our system is now. They argue that the signatures are too subjective. Do you agree with that?
No. And I think our own legislative auditors have shown that. I think they came up through their audit with two instances of fraud. They came up with a number of suggestions of ways that they could tighten this up. And by the time the audit had come out, I think the clerks had implemented all the recommended changes in most counties across the state. So if this is something they came back and said, we have thousands of issues, yeah, we need to change it. But with two in the state, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so the audits, one of them showed that there were hundreds of people who have been deceased who got ballots when they should have, and two of those voted. Now, those are currently sitting with the Utah Attorney General's office for possible prosecution, because that's fraud in Utah, right? But how do we solve that problem that we have voter rolls that are not as clean as they should be?
And I know there's a bill that Representative Lisenby is running to try to address that, but I think if you take the portion from Representative Burton's bill dealing with showing up to the county clerk and proving you are who you are and your address is what it is, that's going to solve it on its own.
Do you take issue with showing ID in general in this mail-in ballot process? And if it's not returning it in person so you can't show ID, what is the right point at the mail-in? I know we do it during registration, but what is the right point when you vote by mail to show ID?
And this came up in the hearing. I asked about our overseas, because there's federal law that dictates how we handle military members, church missionaries that are living overseas, and obviously they cannot show ID. And so I think whatever is good for them under federal law, we need to be using in our state standard. And they talked about maybe having them write their driver's license number or the last four of their social, something that is uniquely identifiable to them. And I wouldn't have a problem with that being the standard across the whole state. But it's weird to me to want a standard for the people who live here and then different standard for the people who are overseas, just because of the complications of having to deal with the overseas ballots.
And that's one of the plans the Senate has rumored that they may come out with, the last four of your social and a signature on the back of your envelope. Clerks would then have to reprint the ballot envelopes, basically. There would be a little bit of a cost associated with that.
Yeah, and I think that accomplishes the kind of the soul of the bill without making it so hard. And this is me representing Midvale, Sandy, and Murray, places where we have so many drop boxes that are readily accessible. You know, I'm thinking about our, you know, indigenous people living on a reservation that have to drive hours to get to this, you know, the people in rural Utah, that this is not convenient. And I know that those issues came up with representatives of the Disability Law Center, and there are groups of people that would be severely affected by the bill as is.
Let's switch gears in our final minute here, so you can just weigh in. One of the biggest bills that just passed the legislature now is a bill that prevents public labor unions from collectively bargaining. This was a compromise gone bad where the unions thought they may have a compromise. It never materialized, and now we have a ban on collective bargaining. Your caucus thoughts on that and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this solves a problem that doesn't exist. You know, I think the amount of people that showed up at every committee hearing, You know, I don't think I've gotten one email or text, phone call, nothing in support of this bill. And I think that's true for most representatives. And then to have the legislature and supermajority, not in whole, but enough to pass a bill, step in and say, we know better, I think is really an affront to voters.
How will the union members be impacted by what just passed this week?
You know, it'll be interesting to see, because all along we've been told this doesn't affect unions. It doesn't change unions, but it really does. And I look at school districts. You know, now under the bill, if signed by the governor, people can advocate for themselves. But how does that work logistically? You know, is every single teacher going to show up to their superintendent and say, here's what I demand? I just think it's a logistical nightmare.
Representative Anderstotter, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up on Inside Utah Politics, tweaking the way Utah tackles its homelessness crisis. We talked to the sponsor of two major reforms. Welcome back into Inside Utah Politics. Thank you for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz here with Representative Tyler Clancy, who is one of the lawmakers on Utah's Capitol Hill, really championing the homelessness issue. Representative Clancy, thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to be frank that homelessness is an issue that is really convoluted. It's really complicated. It requires a lot of pieces. There's like a whole cycle when it comes to homelessness and people experiencing homelessness. And if you kind of like poke at any one section of that cycle, you disrupt the whole thing, mm-hmm. right? So just walk me through, what is the main issue with homelessness in trying to solve this for our homeless population?
Well, you nailed it, Lindsay. It is an extremely complex issue. From domestic violence to eviction to drug addiction, mental health, all of those are co-occurring factors in different parts of our homeless population. What we're trying to accomplish this legislative session is to get better data, be able to have those intentional public policy interventions for each specific subset of what our homelessness population is. Look at states like California, who have spent over and over and over again billions of dollars, and they don't really have much to show for it. That's because they're taking a one-size-fits-all approach called housing first. We're really trying to pare that back and curtail in Utah to make sure we can address those solutions however we want to.
Okay, so housing is part of the solution, but you're saying it's not going to be a housing first kind of proposal. So talk to me about, in your mind, what does come first?
Absolutely. Well, it depends. Housing could come first. Housing first in the federal rulemaking regime has really turned into this housing only, where you can't engage someone in services. You can't mandate that someone take part in a drug treatment program or a mental health treatment program as part of their broader continuum of care. We wanna make sure that we're addressing people's core needs. If it is housing, we wanna make sure those options are available. But if it's something deeper, we wanna address the root cause, not just what presents itself on the surface.
Okay, so you have two different bills that would kind of address homelessness. Explain HB 199 to me.
So the number one cause of death for all homeless Utahns is a fatal drug overdose. 35% of all homeless Utahns who passed away last year did so from a fatal drug overdose. That is mission critical. We've got to improve our overdose response, recognizing that while Narcan is an important life-saving measure, we have to make sure first responders have those treatment options at the moment when they're reversing that overdose. We're gonna expand drug treatment. We're gonna make sure that in rural Utah or homeless Utahns can access treatment through mobile MAT providers. But we're also gonna be very intentional. We're gonna regulate our harm reduction programs, make sure that recovery is a piece, is a puzzle piece of those harm reduction programs. And most importantly, we're gonna crack down on nuisance properties. We're gonna make sure that whether it's an illicit drug house in a residential neighborhood or a hotel or motel where 50% of 911 calls in a city are directed within one city block, we've gotta end that. And we're time to bring our laws up to date to make sure we can do that.
During that committee, one of the big issues was this needle exchange program that we have in Utah. And some of the service providers took issue that you didn't want to allow this needle exchange program. At least your bill would prevent that in certain areas, things like parks, stuff like that. Will you change that concern, or is that something you're hard and fast on?
So we're working on it. What the bill says right now is it's drug-free zones. So we've already outlined in code that there are certain places in our community where we've said these are drug-free zones. The ones that they mentioned were parks, but it's also churches. It's also daycare centers, schools, things where we've agreed as a society that drugs shouldn't be. Simply what my bill is saying, that if we've already said as a society that drugs shouldn't be in these zones, let's make sure we're not maybe facilitating drug use by bringing the mobile syringe exchange, making sure that we're doing it the right way.
Okay, so that would just be the mobile piece of it,
exactly.
Right? You're saying couldn't be in these certain areas. Switching to your other bill, forgive me the number, HB 329.
You got it.
Is that right? Okay, there's a lot of numbers up here. We run like 500 bills. So HB 329 is a more expansive homelessness bill, and part of it bans unsanctioned camping. That's a little bit of a controversial proposal. Explain why you believe that's a good idea.
So we've had an unsanctioned camping ban in Utah for a long time. What we're setting is the expectation that in any city, in any zip code, that you should not have a homeless encampment or an open-air drug market in where you live. House Bill 329 is really seeking to make sure we exert that pressure to get people into treatment who desperately need it. The provision specific that we're looking at in 329 is making sure we have drug-free homeless service shelters. And I'll give you an example. We want to make sure that if you were talking to your loved one who would be homeless and they're in some sort of recovery, whether that be from meth, fentanyl, or any other illicit drug, is the homeless shelter a safe place to go if you're in recovery? We want to resoundingly be able to answer yes, because taxpayers have already footed the bill for millions of dollars for these facilities. Let's make sure they're safe.
So if we go back to our big circle analogy where homelessness kind of has all these different pieces of this pie, another piece of that pie would be the shelters where we house people. There has been conversations about where shelters should go. A lot of focus on the capital city and Salt Lake City and them dealing with homelessness. How do you see the shelter piece fitting in? Because we've talked a lot about substance abuse today.
Certainly. Well, I think what you're keying in on is there's been a lot of resistance to homeless shelters expanding in places where they haven't been before. The question I'm seeking to address is, why is that? When we fail to address the underlying issues, which is drugs, crime, and disorder around these shelters, well, we certainly, any reasonable person wouldn't want that type of behavior in their neighborhood. So what I'm saying is, let's fix these core issues. Let's make sure that people need help, drug treatment, let's get them treatment. If they need mental health care, let's get them mental health care. And if someone's a career criminal, let's make sure they go to jail and they're not out being a menace to society. When we do all that, that gives us the opportunity to expand resources. That gives us the trust as a system to make sure that we can get help to people who need it.
The state has basically come in and said to Salt Lake City, clean it up, or we're going to come in and clean it up for
right.
you. Where does it sit? Has Mayor Mendenhall done enough in the legislature's mind to clean up Salt Lake City or better enforce her? She came out with her homelessness plan, her public safety plan. Has she done enough?
Well, I'll tell you, I've read through Mayor Mendenhall's plan, and it is really expansive. It's very specific. They've also asked specific things of the legislature, and you will see that reflected in legislation to make sure we have a partnership. We certainly, there's differing political beliefs between, you know, the capital city of Salt Lake City and some of our state legislators, myself included being a Republican. But I think one thing that we can always agree on is you deserve to be safe. You deserve to be able to go to the park and not have to check for needles before you go throw the ball with your son or your daughter. You should be able to walk down to the supermarket and not be worried that you're going to be harassed by someone experiencing, a high from meth. Those are all things that whatever zip code, whatever neighborhood you're in, you deserve to be safe. That's something we're gonna work together on.
Homelessness, I know, has you have a personal connection to it, and substance abuse in particular. Do you mind sharing some of that with us?
I'm no different than I think most people in Utah, that I've had loved ones pass away from fatal drug overdose. I think what is important that when we look at graphs, I could sit here and give you data points all day, but it doesn't mean anything to a mother who's got that empty chair at the dinner table because their son's gone. It doesn't mean anything to a young daughter who's gonna grow up without her mom for the rest of her life. I truly don't think we'll be having this conversation in 20 years, and we still won't be able to wrap our minds around the absolute devastation of this opioid crisis. Is it a public health issue? Absolutely. Is it a public safety issue? Absolutely. And I think what you're going to see in this legislative session is we're saying a yes and all the above approach.
Representative Tyler Clancy, thank you so much for your thoughts today.
Appreciate it.
Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure you reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me on social media. I'm on X, Blue Sky, and Threads. Lindsay on Air. Lindsay spelled with an A. That's on Instagram as well. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, find ABC4 on social media to follow along no matter where you are. And while you're at it, download the ABC4 News app. We're always on. Thanks, everyone, for being with us. We'll see you next week.